Hey everybody, my name is Captain Jeff Monroe, Director of Education Programs and for the International Association of Maritime Port Executives. And I'd like to welcome you to another episode of Port Perspectives, a program we've designed to talk to leading people in the industry about some of their backgrounds, about some of the work that they're doing, and also to get an opportunity to kind of provide some direction and guidance to particularly our young people coming into the industry. And today I have a special guest, Winston Ziegler, who is the head of sales for the USA and the Caribbean at Liebherr Maritime Cranes. And I thought it'd be very interesting to talk to somebody about equipment, fundamentally because there's so many technological changes that are going on right now in the industry, and we'd like to hear a little bit about it. But it's also about, you know, how somebody becomes the head of sales for the United States and the Caribbean. So, Winston, welcome. Nice to have you with us. You and I have known each other for a long time.
Indeed.
And we bought some of your cranes way back when, you know, when I was up in Portland and stuff like that. So it's great to have you with us. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Hi, Jeff. So yeah, no, thanks so much for having me on your podcast. And indeed, it goes the meantime goes back a few years even for you and I, because I've been now 12 years now, obviously in the US now. Going back, I mean, originally, I guess working career started off with BMW. So I was working as a design engineer for, the seat designs at BMW. And so I was working on the engineering side of that. And then I was looking to go into sales. And at that time, Liebherr, BMW wasn't employing, but I knew Liebherr was. And they had this offshore crane department. And so they were looking for people in their sales team. And the interesting thing was that at that time was a 12, 15 man office, taking care of the products worldwide. And that intrigued me, just obviously having an international open background. So then I moved then to Austria at the time and started there. So it was 3 or 4 years there at the factory in Austria with Liebherr. And then got involved with some of the heavy lift cranes they were doing. So they were doing then just started with a 1,600 ton crane. Today they do 5,000 tons. So it was already fascinating of the big oil and gas industry at the time out there, and also the developing wind offshore industry up in here in the for Germany and Denmark at the time. And I just then wanted to go abroad again. And so they needed somebody in the Miami office. And so obviously having an American passport helps for the employer. So they were like, come on, get out there. So I joined then it was predominantly the mobile harbor cranes, but also supporting the ship and offshore cranes. And so started off there, then obviously we had existing customers, started to visit them all, get to know them, got to know the market. Obviously a lot has happened in 12 years time. I'm sure we get into a little bit more, but just with time, at one point I was covering the whole US by myself, so single-handedly, for sure it was a challenge, but at the same time we experienced great success. I think also for Liebherr it was then an eye-opener. Just obviously they knew the US was big, but the numbers weren't there yet, and suddenly the numbers started popping up, and I think then there was a lot more attention to it. And fast forward today, you know, if we look at, obviously, I mean, somehow we're still a small player in it all. As much as Liebherr is big in manufacturing, crane manufacturing, they're, you know, the largest crane manufacturer in total numbers, but in the port equipment, obviously we're for sure, you know, leader today with the mobile harbor cranes also in the US and in the Central Caribbean arena. Still, if you look at certain parts of however you categorize it, you see that, you know, Liebherr just still a small part of it. Yeah. And so, that still leaves a lot of, potential out there, a lot of vision out there where it could go. And so in the meantime, obviously we've grown, we had to structure ourselves a little bit more, just to take on it. So today we have, obviously with our division now, in the meantime, ahead of sales, we have a division director over at Maritime. And I was fortunate enough to be selected for that. And so today I lead that and still support the clients today over our coastlines in the inland rivers And it's still my vision just to help as much as possible. You know, your customers keep you honest. And so, yeah, every day is a new day. But at the same time, technology has advanced a lot. So that makes it very just kind of exciting just to see where it goes. Yeah. And that's where we are today.
So, being that you really handle and have handled things worldwide, what do you think the biggest challenges the ports are facing right now? I know, for example, in the United States, we have a lot of ports that have aging infrastructure and have a desire to get new equipment and everything. And all of a sudden they find themselves, yeah, the buying the crane is the easiest part of it, or buying new equipment is the easiest part of it. It's about restoration of docks. You know, it's about building up the static landing weights and stuff, and about looking at the aspects of, bringing in bigger vessels and everything like that. But what have you found sort of universally are some of the biggest challenges that the ports are facing right now?
Yeah, I mean, it depends on sometimes on the size of it all. I mean, the bigger terminals, obviously, you know, they find the means to get funding for it. You know, if it's for the kind of intermediate size ones, then they're interested in finding funding on it. And then that's the first hurdle that they start to see. They're like, hey, great, we could get funding. And now the electrification kind of, you know, the latest demand or requirement that ports want to have, you know, integrated into their ports and their equipment. They're immediately like, oh, you get funding, but the stuff's not made in the US. Yeah. And so, of course, I think states and governments would love to support, but then they were like, well, wait a minute, the stuff's not made here. So, you know, of course they would require it to have it made in the US. And so, you know, that's the first thing we get then, like, how can you help on that? Yeah. And so that's the first step. But obviously if they do get the funding there, it's more of the question of, you know, just, you know, how far can it go for, so like, say, ship to shores. I think some would love to have more remote operations on it. Obviously, they have, depending on if it's a union, non-union, you know, then they would like to work with unions, not to, you know, take away any jobs. I think they just want to add to that. Yeah. Because the remote operations is, I mean, they're exciting as hell if you've ever seen it or driven it. Yeah. Because you sit there remotely and you're driving the cranes. And so I think terminals will love it. And it's actually a more comfortable environment, and even believe it or not, for the operator, it's actually more sociable, because you're sitting there then with other crane operators, not just you yourself up there. But you know, that's more, you know, ship to shores. So I think, you know, overall on the technology side of it's wanting to advance it more, as much as recognition systems you can get on there as much as possible. Remote operations would be, you know, real nice to have, but for sure they're all eyeing it at this point. But no, that could be further down the road before, you know, even though technology might be, I wouldn't say it's, you know, it's all super developed right now, and super efficient, but it's for sure more developed than it has been. And so of course ports and terminals would like to have more than there it is. And then of course, just, you know, the electrification is just the big wave right now. And, you know, for sure, part of it is then also bringing power to the dock. So depending on what terminal it is, some have it already, many don't. And then there's another challenge, just of course, you know, if they're looking to get bigger vessels, can they get bigger cranes on it? Do they need to reconstruct the pier? Can they, you know, take an existing STS with the rail gauge and put it on there? Then sometimes they can be pinched in that a little bit, just, you know, like, oh God, I got to reconstruct the pier, stop my operations, and then wait for the cranes. And then of course they got the budget investments they got to do twice. So obviously for, the pier and the cranes. So sometimes that can be the big challenge, on it, as much as the ports are still wanting to push for it overall, I would say. Yeah. So
what are the lead times now on delivering cranes? You know, I know there's a huge amount of demand worldwide for, you know, STS cranes, for ground equipment, reach stackers, and all the rest of it. What's the lead time on delivering a lot of this equipment at this point that port directors need to plan on if they're going to be moving forward and redesigning their piers and doing all the rest of this?
Yeah, I mean, just roughly speaking, I mean, if we're ship to shores, right now we're about 18 to 20 months. I mean, totally depends on size and requirements. For mobile harbor cranes, I mean, we're somewhere between 9 and 11 months. And then RTGs were about 12, 14 months, and RMGs about 15, 16 months. just around, roughly speaking. Yeah, some can go quicker, some can go can take a bit longer. That just comes down to certain components that maybe just take a little bit longer. But that's where we are approximately. So overall, just looking back now, just with where we've been with the COVID situation, so things of course expanded a lot, but now things are just calming down a little bit. So in terms of lead times, they're just starting to calm a little. It's just a little bit depending on certain components or sub-suppliers, what that is, where there's still maybe a bit of variability in it. But at least that has calmed down a little. Yeah.
So I know certainly that, you know, all of the ports are addressing climate change right now, you know, obviously, and sea level rise and all the rest of it. And, you know, your STS cranes are electric, as most STS cranes are right now. But your RTGs, your, you know, RGMs and also, you know, your reach stacks and everything, that's looking at a different type of technology. And I know that there's always been issues where people have fondness for different types of equipment. Some mm-hmm. people like electric because there's no emissions. But on the other hand, it takes a long time to charge the equipment up. You know, it doesn't have the power that the diesels have and et cetera, et cetera. How are you addressing the non-electric aspects of this that in regards to meeting the demand for, you know, protecting the climate right now?
Yeah, so, I mean, obviously, our ship to shores, obviously, they're full electric. I mean, there might be some exceptions. We actually just sold a couple of where, you know, the requirement is there to have gensets on them. But that's a military requirement there. But generally, all ship to shores, I mean, almost all of our ship to shores for years have always been full electric, not just the US, I mean, just all over, really. Yeah. You know, mobile harbor cranes for us now are typically, because there's a mobile undercarriage, you need the mobility. So we've always had a diesel in there. So, and vice versa, the terminals always don't always have, because they can be in locations where, you know, they're just not, there's not immediately a connection to the grid. I mean, for, you know, low voltage, but not obviously where you need higher voltages. So, so some of these, and they haven't built it out yet or don't see the need. And so those continue to do it, but what's been happening on that side, if they're continuing to stay on the diesel side, is that, you know, at least we're experiencing in Europe now, at least, where they're having this synthetic, oils, where it's called HVO oil. So the emissions drop by 90%. So basically you just drop this in there and then your emissions drop down. So, you're finding this in different locations in Europe happening, it not just, let's say, us, let's say mobile harbor cranes, we're finding it also in our crawler cranes, our very large crawler cranes, let's say the 1,000 tonners and bigger, they have it too. So that's one side of it. On the other side, we have electrical engines. So in a mobile harbor crane, we can place also the electrical engines in there. So basically, you just hook up the power to the grid there. We can go low voltage. We can go higher voltages. It's just typically more reliable to go a higher voltage. So you just don't have the variability in the supply of the power. So that when you're operating, basically, you're just running off of that. And sure, your emissions go down to zero. The nice thing is also just the maintenance and the reliability. So you just don't have the whole maintenance of the engine anymore, right? You're not challenging any gaskets or any headlocks. There's nothing like that. So that those engines have proven to be really reliable, you know, just in reliability, but they just run and run. And so far we haven't had to replace one. So that's been a real nice plus to that. So when the maintenance guys get there, they're like, yeah, great. Yeah. Now battery development has to be seen as just kind of moving the crane, not for operating, because you just need so much power, right? So that's in there. You know, that's still for us a development out there. The big challenge is there is the suppliers. So battery suppliers, they're there, but they change again. Yeah. So before you know it, the company doesn't exist, and then you need a new one. Yeah. So that's the big nugget there to figure out how to handle for all suppliers. Yeah, it's.
Are you thinking about hydrogen at all?
Hydrogen is that's basically for all our equipment. Yeah, mobile harbor cranes, crawler cranes, construction cranes. That seems, and also our components. We have another division of those engines and components as well. That seems the real interesting part now, where let's see where this goes. So there's research and interest being done that on for sure on the Leaper side. And I've seen in a couple of applications. I haven't seen just the wave of it happen in the ports just yet, but I do see that as, you know, potential one there that could go off. Ammonium, just research projects, a couple of trials, but nothing yet where I could see that just taking off just yet. Yeah, you know, I mean, there's a couple of additional things where we're trying to put, let's say, in our electrical equipment, we'll put capacitors in there. So you'll try to shave off some of the peaks. So for instance, in our RTGs, you have the interesting thing, let's say you see the picture in the background of me, you might have 30 RTGs, and the lifts, of course, is where it takes all the energy, right? And that's where you need the peak energy. Generally, when they're running idle, it's a lower power base that's needed. But when you're doing the lifts and you have, let's say, a lot of RTGs or automatic stacking cranes, you have a lot of power that's needed there, and you need it promptly. But if you have the supercapacitors, they can shave off those peaks. And so you don't need such a high or big power supply, or even, you know, if it's an RTG, you still might need the diesel, but you might not need as a big size of an engine. Now, that depends on the requirements at the end of the day, but that's also something we've integrated, say, into our ship to shores. We have it different on a mobile harbor crane, which is predominantly hydraulic, but we have accumulators, which is kind of the same concept. So we used to have a double motor in there, but we're able to keep now the same engine in it, the same side, but we have an accumulator, which basically takes off those peaks as well. So we have those predominantly, let's say, in our bulk applications in the US. Predominantly, those will go, let's say, into a bulk port, and so that takes out. So that's kind of, you know, nice technology to have, and it kind of adds on to, you know, the scope of things. You know, I think just you know, how far the electrification will happen, it's for sure a talking point with every offering I have. So you know, ports are wondering how to use it, how to take advantage of it. Yeah, you know, so predominantly the time it's a discussion with every project.
Full disclosure, of course, I bought one of your first mobile harbor cranes here in the United States when I was the port director up in Portland,
and it's still there,
and it's still going strong. I think it's been moved to Eastport now, but it's right, still going right. strong. And then, of course, they bought two more cranes off of you.
Right.
And I've been a particular fan of mobile harbor cranes for a long time because I find them to be some of the most versatile. And I always find it interesting. You go to a port and they have they have three or four STS cranes, but they have a mobile harbor crane or two as well, because right. they're handling other types of cargoes and stuff. And you had mentioned to me one time that the predominance of people who are interested in mobile harbor cranes are like in places like South America and Africa, you know, and Europe and stuff like that. How has that market opened up, or has it opened up here in the United States?
So, yeah, I would say, obviously, I've been out here 12 years in the US. So at the start, it was, you know, obviously introducing the name Leaper, obviously, you know, for whom I work for. And the mobile harbor crane wasn't such an accepted product yet. And historically, the US, I would say, is an STS market, as well as a crawler crane market. So that was, let's just say, roughly inland waters, you know, coastlines, you just name it. Yeah. And that's changed for sure. So I would say the coastlines, all four major coastlines, are aware of the mobile harbor crane. So that's really become a part of the standard port equipment acceptance on the customer side. So when they're looking at equipment, they know, okay, we have ship to shores. Yes, there's mobile harbor cranes. They're valid equipment as well. And I've even seen it on stuff where port directors have had mobile harbor cranes purchase them. They switched to another port, and they go, "Why are you guys not looking at a mobile harbor crane?" So you can see how then not just me jumping the beat of just like, "Hey, go buy that." It's been really like, yeah, you can see that that's been an acceptance as well.
And we found that pedestal cranes seem to work in smaller ports as well. Because, you know, they frequently used to moving the barges and stuff with small ships back and forth. And the pedestal crane is a very cost-effective way of kind of approaching it, which brings me kind of to an interesting question. You know, ports are always faced with the aspect of business development. You know, how do we expand our volumes? How do we expand the amount of cargo that we're handling? You know, how do we keep our costs under control and everything like that? And, you know, you're on the forefront of business development. What's your approach to business development? When you're looking at aspects, what do you think are the most important things that you need to consider as you're trying to grow your particular market, but even how that might relate to how ports might want to do their own business development?
Yeah, I mean, it just kind of goes back for me for the basics. I just kind of go back to, you know, when I started, okay, I went and visit the customers and then I was there and then suddenly, hey, I'm not getting any calls. What do I do now? And so I had to really just work the groundwork of then visiting a lot of customers, a lot of potential customers, some that didn't want to see me. Or did like, who are you? Yeah.
And I know how that feels. Trust me.
Yeah. Just then you know it, right? You just have to do it, but also really listening to them, right? What is that they want, you know? And not just to look at it as a blanket sheet of, you know, oh, ports, because you could just go like, well, it's just all the same, right? They're all just putting a crane there and offloading some vessels and the stuff's going to go in and out. But you really look at it. And you listen to them, it's suddenly the ports are very differentiated. They're in different phases of where they are. And so you have to then also, once you do talk to them, you know, provide as much info as you can for them, even if they're not ready yet or not wanting to be in the market, or, you know, even if there's maybe no apparent interest, because they're still listening, right? And they're still curious to see what you have to offer. And it doesn't matter if it's training or equipment or, you know, how to, because in the end, they're trying to provide a service for their customers and you got to figure out what's important to their customers. So once you kind of understand that and what kind of the angle it is and are sensitive to that, then you start to see where their needs are, where the challenges are. And then you also start to see where the services and products that oneself offers, how to fit that in and pitch that. And then really also just being, you know, for sure for me, it was just being persistent. Yeah. I mean, you just got to keep visiting, keep calling, keep seeing. Of course, there's going to be periods where it's important. Yeah. So you have to then, you know, bounce on it. Yeah. And also just be full of conviction. Yeah. I mean, just you know, I mean, I know obviously for whom I work for, yeah, but it's also, you know, it's vice versa. Yeah. So I'm full of conviction who I work for, but it has an effect on not just my customers, but us internally. They're like, oh, right. We have a good product and the customers like it. Like, yeah, you know? So, you know, I think that's a real key, but, you know, I think it's really understanding what does your customer really need? And, you know, how does the product and service fit and where does it need to adapt so you get there? Yeah, to really bridge that gap. And just, you know, once you get that and actually are able to close a few of these, of course, you become more confident with that. Yeah. And then just being relentless at it. I mean, you never know, because I know that phone cannot ring. Yeah. It's really, you know, not letting go and working consistently at it. So even you have your days off. Business side, I never let go of. Yeah, I always keep an eye on that. And then, like, you know, for instance, today I remember we have hydrostatic cranes, and then the customer in the Mississippi River, I kept visiting. Even my colleagues, you know, were saying, "What are you doing there? It's not your market." Yeah, and still kept visiting. And one day I was talking internally. They're like, you know, how come they're not buying our cranes? Yeah. I was like, well, they want fully electric cranes. That's what they want. Yeah. And there was a couple of things also to it. And so in the end, NEPA came around and produced a fully electric crane. So not just that it's powered electric, the components are electric, which was just taboo in the past internally, right? And understood the potential there. Because then also, you know, I myself worked into the depth of the knowledge of the market, right? If you look at Louisiana, it's the biggest state per tonnage, as you probably know, right? Compared to any others, which is then, you know, it's just so it's not immediately apparent because the containers get a lot of focus and you think, oh, it's LA and it's New York and, you know, Savannah and whoa, you know. And so you look at Louisiana and you're like, whoa, wait a minute. And then you start to realize, oh, it's on the Mississippi River, and the Mississippi River is a huge river, right? And And then you start to realize, oh, what's there? And you see how many cranes and what the volumes are there. And I think the other thing is also just being curious. Be curious about the customers, be curious what they're dealing with. I think, that helps to just, just to move forward on what you're dealing with.
I see a lot of our obviously our private terminal operators, they understand the aspect of not only marketing but sales and closing the deal. And we always encourage, certainly in our executive program, to think more like the private sector, that what you've talked about is fairly universal. You want to have relations, you want to know what their needs are, you want to try to adapt to those needs and everything. And I think that's always a critical factor, and of course it's gospel in the private sector, but not so much in the public sector. And that, primarily because a lot of the ports themselves are landlord ports and everything. But they'll eventually, they invest in the STS cranes. A lot of public money goes into that. But to think more along those lines. But it seems to me that, and disagree with me if you will, that the personal relationship with your potential customers, with your existing customers, is something that's not just one-off, but something that has to be ongoing, and that a lot of business is done based on those personal relationships.
Oh yeah, I mean, you know as well, Jeff, I know you're on the road every week as well. I mean, it's vice versa. It's not just, like, say it's a must. It's the nice part of it, I would say, especially the industry that we deal with. But even, yes, there's certain things that you can do on, like here, Zoom, Teams, which help to manage certain things. But the personal relationships, just being in front of, your clients, or just the interaction, that hasn't been replaced by technology. And that is still key. And that's also still demand, especially what we do. We have to go to the ports, so you have to be on the road. And still doing that is an absolute, in my mind, a must. And vice versa, when you're in a port, you see what's going on, you see something's maybe changed, and vice versa, the ports change too. It's a different person, and so you got to reestablish that and see what that person is like and what's important to that person. And so that just remains an ongoing work, because as time passes, so there is somebody different there. So
that's right. Yeah. Like always, right. Who knows, you never know where you're going to wind up. But Winston, as well as we see in the port industry, there's a lot of young people coming into the industry. The nature, in the last, we just celebrated our 10th anniversary at the association, even though I've been teaching this program for 15 years. And that, when I first got started, it was, a bunch of old guys like me. Now we see a lot of young people in their 30s and 40s, a large number of women have taken the program. Of course, we're a pretty colorblind industry as well. But what advice would you give to young people who, whatever their aspirations are within the public or private sector that you've seen, what advice would you give to young people that they should be focused on in the anticipation and hopes that someday they will have a position like yours as head of sales, or a port director's position, or some other key position of management within an organization, like so many of our good graduates have already achieved? But what advice would you give them?
I mean, I guess I hope it's not too universal, like I said before, but it's, I think for sure, take an interest in the people you deal with, and really provide value and care with them. Because in essence, it's the people you're working with, and vice versa. Let's say if they do buy, crane from us, or even from myself, they want to know, can I call you? Can I, is this the right person I want to deal with? Did they feel comfortable with you? And vice versa, you want to be, comfortable with them too, right? And so I think, taking a real keen interest in them, I think for sure, being, empathetic and understanding to what they're going through, because it humbles you on the one side. It just kind of like, you don't need to be this, superhero, or you think you need to do some gimmick or something. And then you really understand where they're at, But also you understand where to provide, so you're not so forced. Yeah, it's not like you have to force this information down them. No, you just gotta guide them to what they need. And then obviously you want to help them or over deliver, but you don't need to swamp them with, you know, super long emails or something. Yeah. But I think, you know, with that, you want to cater to them too, so that they're getting the information, so they're progressing to where they need to go, and making sure you actually are closing deals. Yeah. So that you can see then actually, like, not just for yourself, right? But I mean, ultimate for yourself, because you need your self-esteem, right? But also, you know, that they can see, oh, look, Leaper's got a crane here, and oh, you've got one over there, and time passes, and then they're going, where are the last cranes you sold, right? And then so it's important to still push on that. And I think that's
wonderful advice. You know, I mean, yeah. Bottom line is that people need to persevere. It's not necessarily about planning out your career. It's about doing the very best at where you are, and that gets recognized. Right. Yeah. You know, yeah. And I see, you know, as I say, we see a lot of people going out, you know, there's several of our graduates of our program who are now port directors in New York and New Orleans, you know, in Savannah, Georgia, and places like that. And they've done very, very well. But as I say, they're getting younger. The crowds are getting younger. And even the international students we get, I see, are a lot younger. So I'm the oldest guy in the room, sometimes twice their age, but I find it. But I did want to take a moment also, you know, you guys have been great supporters over the years with us. And certainly you were right there at the beginning with us and everything. And we're really great to have you as a corporate sponsor and corporate member of the IAMPE. Of course, we're not for profit, but, you know, we rely on industry to be supportive. And you've always been there, not only just, you know, providing great things like pens and hats, you know, but also information. I mean, it's very challenging when you have such a complex program of material to keep that material up to date. And I know that every time I've ever given you a call and needed information about, you know, equipment technology, about, you know, different types of materials and stuff like that, even, you know, in estimates on pricing and everything, you've always been very forthcoming for, and we are very grateful for that. And I want to take a moment to thank you and to thank Liebherr for just all of the help that you've given us over the years and everything like that. And it was a real pleasure talking to you today.
Jeff, thank you. You've always been very generous and accommodating to me. So as you know, I came over very timidly, and there's not many, but I know there's a handful of people that are always very welcoming to me. So I do feel indebted to you. So Jeff, thank you. Yeah, indeed.
Well, maybe I'll pick up another crane. I've been looking for something to put in the yard. That would.
Oh, there we go. I've got another task.
I'm already planning on that little model crane you get. It's already going to be a gift for my grandson in the not too distant future. Well, Winston, thank you so much, and my very best to you. And to everybody at Liebherr, and thank you very much for all the help you've given us, and have a great day. And I thank everybody for joining us. I hope this has been insightful on our port perspectives, and stay with us on our series as we talk to some of the CEOs and senior management people in our industry. So have a great day, everybody, and take care.